Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Well, how would you like to play around with a fully accessible computer about the size of a credit card and costing about $30? Well, that's what we're going to discuss today.
And we'll discuss it with Mobeen Iqbal, Mike Ray, and Rill, who among them have developed a wide variety of applications, and they show how it opens up the world of computing to people with visual impairments. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip is a collection of enthusiastic endorsements of Raspberry Pi from Mike, Rill, and Mo.
I think the Raspberry Pi for me represents a start. It's a spark. Hopefully it is something that might light a fire of passion about technology and computing and electronics, you know, in somebody just by being able to gain access to this thing.
The other thing Mike has often quoted to me, Linus Torvald, who invented Linux, is quote, is that the Pi makes failure affordable. So that I've been willing to dive deeper into a lot of my system settings and actually learn how to manipulate the operating system, because I know the worst thing I will do, I mean, if I could trash an SD card and have to buy a new one, and even if I trash the Pi itself, replacing it isn't really that big a deal. But if you blow up your Windows laptop, that's serious.
And if you blow it up or if you fail, you just rewrite the card and it takes 10 minutes and off you go again.
And the other thing is that it gives the opportunity for the blind to create instead of always saying, I wish somebody would do this for me.
There's just so much there that you can do. You know, the sky's the limit.
So that was Mike, Rill, and Mo, and we will meet them in just a few seconds.
Now, Nancy referred to this as the Raspberry Pi, V-I, and some of them referred to it as the Pi, P-I. The Pi was the original version that most sighted people are using, but these folks have modified it somewhat to make it accessible for the visually impaired, hence the V-I.
Let's start by meeting Mo, Mike, and Rill.
My name is Mobeen Iqbal, or Mo for short, and I'm 24 years old. I live in the East Midlands in the UK, in somewhere called Lincolnshire. And I've been blind since shortly after birth. And my main area of expertise is hardware. And I also spend my time training visually impaired people on how to use technology. And that all started from when I was at the Royal National College for the Blind in 2007. And I was training a lot of people there with technology, and that's how I started teaching.
We actually had Mo on the show a couple of years ago when he was working with Tony Sales and was one of the developers of Vinix. And we'll have a link to that show in the show notes to this show.
My name is Mike Ray, and I'm 49. I was born with congenital glaucoma. I've been visually impaired to one degree or another since birth. But about 5 years ago, I lost my sight totally very quickly. I was still able to see in one eye until about 5 years ago, and then it went completely. I've been a programmer for about 25 years, and I've had a ham radio license since 1982. Oh, yeah, I didn't mention where I live. I live in the southeast of the UK, about halfway between London and the south coast.
I'm Rill. I live in Wisconsin in the United States. I've been working with computers for 40 years before the PC was invented. And my area of expertise is, at this point, I would say, is in writing things. But I've worked as a programmer, and I've done various platforms doing various things. I have been totally blind since age 8.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success.
This week's focus topic is the Raspberry Pi.
So, Mike, we understand you guys have been working with the Raspberry Vi, VI, and that's a modification of the original Raspberry Pi, PI. So can you tell us what the Raspberry Pi is?
The Raspberry Pi is what's called a single-board computer. It's a little bit bigger than a credit card once you put it into a box, but it's essentially the size of a credit card. And it was created by the people from Cambridge University in the UK when they were alarmed at the reduction in the numbers of and the quality of applicants to science and engineering degrees in Cambridge University. And they felt that computers have got away from the tradition of tinkering and learning and generally using a computer to learn stuff, which is how it was in the early days. Because, of course, nowadays desktop computers and laptop computers are very expensive, very easy to trash and to misconfigure. So they felt that kids were not learning because they were too scared to use the family PC for experimenting. So they created this little single board computer, and it just went ballistic. They thought they might sell a couple of thousand of these things, and they've now sold 2 million.
Now, in addition to being very small, it's also very inexpensive.
Yes, I think $35, isn't it, is the quoted price real, I think, and £25. But you need a few peripherals with that. You need a memory card to boot from, a power supply, perhaps a little plastic box to put it in. You can print out a pattern for a box on a sheet of card and fold it up and put the Pi inside that. So there are ways to make it cheaper, and you can plug it into the family TV. So compared to other computers, it's quite cheap and easy to use.
So basically, for people who like to tinker, you can get yourself this single component, very small computer, just the guts of it, and then purchase and put on whatever peripherals you want and make it into what you want and play around.
Yeah, it runs Linux commonly. I mean, it will run Android and it will run one or two other operating systems as well, but it mostly runs Linux. And it also has what's called some GPIO, general purpose input output pins, which make it possible to configure it to drive electric motors and to sense the outer world and, you know, to put things like rain gauge sensors and pressure sensors and everything onto it. So you can use it to make an embedded device in something else, you know, to control a motor or control a camera, or there's a camera board that plugs into it as well, so you can take stop motion video and full streaming video. Generally, it's got a lot of tinker value.
And we'll be talking a little bit later in the show about how one can make use of the GPIO pins.
Mike talked about the price and the peripherals for the Raspberry Pi. Well, I did a quick search on Amazon and found lots of Raspberry Pis with an assortment of attachments and peripherals. And there's even a book called Raspberry Pi for Dummies. So, you know, they've really arrived. So the main thing we want to talk about is Raspberry Vi, which is a variant of Raspberry Pi. Can one of you give a quick overview of Raspberry Vi?
Okay.
This is Mike, right?
Yeah, this is Mike, yeah. Raspberry Vi it started as an email list, which I started when I was waiting for my first Raspberry Pi to arrive in the post. And I had some questions about the Raspberry Pi, which I couldn't get answered online. So I created a list thinking that other blind people may be interested. And it just occurred to me that Raspberry Vi, just a variation on Raspberry Pi. Then it grew and there's now a website and, you know, we put things online as well.
Before we get into some of the neat kind of things that you people have done with this device and morphed it into, it's interesting to note that you're all visually impaired, and I think one of the first issues that you had to deal with was how to make this accessible. Can one of you talk about some of the issues involved there and what you had to do?
My initial problem when I first got the Raspberry Pi was that there were no accessibility tools enabled on the Raspberry Pi itself, and my only way of connecting to it was through a procedure called SSH, a secure shell connection from another PC. So I connect to it from a Windows PC and use the screen reader on the Windows PC to read the contents of the console window. But I've spent pretty much the whole year getting some accessibility tools to run. We've had some success in getting something called Emacs Speak to work, which is a talking textual desktop, basically, and we have a console mode screen reader running now, and things are getting better. Real, you might want to talk about Emacs Speak a little bit.
To add to Mike's previous comments, people should understand as you get a full operating system you can get on the Pi, because of some technical reasons, you can't get a graphical interface. So we're working from a command prompt. If your listeners have experienced the DOS command prompt, if they don't know Linux, it's like that. So you just get a prompt and you have to know what to type in. One of the fun things you can type in is the word Emacs Speak, and a program called Emacs starts with speech, and that allows you to interface with word processors, coding, compiling, and doing a vast array of many other magical and wonderful things. And so when I do word processing on my Raspberry Pi, which I do almost every day, I don't really have the sense that I'm working from a command prompt. I can use search and replace and highlighting and editing and all of that that you do in a Word document.
For those who don't know, how do you spell Emacs?
E-M-A-C-S.
And basically what you have there is a screen reader now on this Raspberry Pi device, so you don't need to run it from your Windows computer anymore.
That is correct. That was the first thing. So you were logging in literally without speech and starting this program, which was wonderful because we could use the Pi. And later Mike got the rest of the Pi talking in Arch Linux.
Well, that must have been like opening up the floodgates. So now you can access it from inside the operating system itself. And now you can play around and do your development work, right?
Yeah, absolutely. With the console mode screen reader called SpeakUp now, when it speaks from boot, you hear all the boot messages and you hear it boot to a prompt so you can log in. And then if you want to, you can type Emacs Speak, which Real always does, and go into Emacs Speak. And basically, what Real now has is a portable device which fits in a small bag, and she takes it, you know, out and about and works on her writing portably in a much more lightweight and much more, I think, fun way than using a laptop.
And we will have links to sites where you can get not only information but also downloads for Emacs and Emacs Speak.
So it sounds like you have speech support for this. Do you also have Braille support?
As part of the image, we have Braille support so that you can hook up a Braille display to a Raspberry Pi.
And how do you get power to the device?
The Pi can actually be powered using a standard micro USB cable. So the other day, I didn't have a USB power supply handy. I plugged one end of my USB cable into the PC's USB port, the other end into my Pi, and I had power going to my Pi. What I'm guessing you've done, Ray, is used a battery pack. Is that correct? One of these portable battery packs?
Yes, I have a MyCharge Peak 6000, which I plug in for power. The Pi runs off of an SD card, that is its hard drive. I prefer to use a USB stick for storing all my files, and then I plug a keyboard into it.
So you've essentially made yourself a very inexpensive portable note taker that you can carry around.
Yeah, inexpensive is a relative term because the battery pack itself is actually more expensive than the Pi. But you're right. I got a portable keyboard, a small one. I bring the pieces that I need. I'm paying less than I would with a tablet to get a full working operating system that's really not as a content consumable device like the tablets are. Typically, you're consuming content rather than creating it. I have a device that the sort of the sky is the limit about what I want to create.
The Raspberry Pi is about the size of a credit card, and now you're connecting all of this stuff to it. What kind of connections is it physically possible to make to the Raspberry Pi?
A Raspberry Pi Model B, which is the more powerful of the two, has 512 megs of RAM, runs at 700 megahertz. It has two USB ports, an Ethernet port, a HDMI video port, so you can plug in an HDMI television to as a monitor. You can plug in a PAL or CCAM composite video monitor. So some of the analog TVs, which are now redundant in the UK because we've all got digital, can be used as a monitor. And it also has a 3.5mm socket for analog audio, which is what we're using to hear the audio from the screen reader. In addition to that, it has the socket for the SD card on one end and the micro USB power connector. And then it has this dual row of pins, which are general purpose input output pins.
Now, what kinds of applications have you guys gotten to run on this device?
When I first got my Pi, as well as helping Mike test out his various images that him and Jason were releasing, Jason's the other person that worked on the project, I wanted to push my Pi and see if I could actually do something from a visually impaired person's point of view, something more, you know, because a lot of the time, you know, you have plenty of people making things online with the Pi, but not something that a blind person could do. If you want to install an operating system to the card on a Raspberry Pi, you can use a number of programs. You can use tools already available in Linux or various tools in Windows to copy what's called an image to the SD card. And an image is a compressed file with all the operating system files on it, which gets decompressed when you use the program to copy the operating system files to the card. And once that's the image is decompressed and once the process is complete, you can then insert that card into your Raspberry Pi and start the Pi, and off you go. So I read about various projects, and my primary project at the time was how to make a switchboard. Now, me being curious, I wanted to build my own public exchange switchboard. So I downloaded an image of an operating system which somebody had already made for the Pi, which contained all the tools I'd need to make a switchboard. And I spent about 2 or 3 days working on it and ranting on Skype to Mike, because various parts I couldn't get working. You know, it took me ages to solve various problems I had, but I actually did manage to place and receive calls using this switchboard. It was patchy, but it worked for taking and receiving calls, for putting people on hold, for conferencing within a local network.
Wow, that's really cool.
Other projects which I also looked at was how to run a web server. But if you want to host your own website, for example, instead of paying somebody else money, why not just buy a Raspberry Pi and run what's called a LAMP server, Linux, Apache Web, Mail, and PHP server, which are all the tools you'll need to run a website and email server from your Raspberry Pi. And you can serve up pages, run a fully fledged website. You can even run multiple websites using a Pi. And finally, I also tried to make what's called a network attached storage system. So we have so many files floating around. I don't know about you guys, but I've got loads of pen drives all over my desk, you know? And it's hard to stay in sync with which files are where and where everything's stored. So again, I used my Pi and experimented with making a system where I could have one hard drive plugged into the Pi centrally on my network, and I could access that drive from anywhere in the house or even from outside my house. I could access that drive and all the files that are stored on it. So that's what's meant by a NAS network attached storage system. These are the kind of things that people have made with the Pi, you know, all kinds of different projects. People are using it to automate their central heating systems, their lighting systems, control their fridges, washing machines, anything. So if you do a search online for various Pi projects, they've even used it to make Christmas decorations for their desks. But it's got so many different applications, you know, so many different things you can control.
Now, you guys are all pretty computer savvy with a fair amount of experience. What are you programming in? What languages? What do you need to know?
When you find yourself a command prompt in Linux, you're actually in what's called a shell environment, and there is a programming language called Bash, which actually stands for Born Again Shell. It's just the kind of shell language that you can write code in or write things to manipulate files and to copy files from A to B, or you can also manipulate the GPIO pins with Bash. But the Raspberry Pi has Python on it, and Python is a very good educational language. It's very easy to learn, very scalable. It's got very simple syntax, but it's also scalable to write very powerful applications. And of course, Linux comes with lots and lots of development tools built right into the operating system. You can write in probably half a dozen different languages straight out of the box.
You mentioned that the Raspberry Pi comes with the default operating system being Linux, but some of these specialty applications, do they require different operating systems?
Yes, they do. I mean, the Pi, for example, what you'll find if you do a Google search is various projects with various goals to create something with the Pi. So, for example, there's a project called XBMC. That converts your Pi into a media center. When you download the software from that particular project's website and copy it across to your SD card and plug your SD card in, if it's plugged into your TV, you can then browse files on your home network, play back video. I think they're even working on browsing the internet with XBMC. You know, so you can convert your Pi into a TV media center. And for example, the project that I mentioned, which was based on something called the Asterisk switchboard, it's a free of charge switchboard. Again, they've got their own project. They've got their own software file that you can download and copy to your memory card. And again, you can have multiple memory cards. This is the great thing about the Pi. And, you know, as on a normal PC, you just have one operating system. You know, a lot of people have cases full of SD cards, you know, with different software on each different card. And all they have to do is swap the card out of the Pi and put the other card in, and they've suddenly got a media center where before they had a portable note taker. So it's just got huge potential. So my advice would be to go to each individual project's website. What I tend to do is just do a Google search and just see if anybody's actually done the project that I'm hoping to achieve with the Pi and see how they've done it.
Now, if people wanted to find out more about this or get involved, get their own Raspberry Pi or learn about the Raspberry Vi environment, where are the resources they can go to find out about these things?
The Raspberry Pi Foundation have a website, which is www.raspberrypi.org. And our website is www.raspberryvi.org. And I did actually check with Liz Upton of the Raspberry Pi Foundation that they weren't going to get upset about the closeness of the two domains, and they were quite happy for it. So they can go to our website, and on the front page they will find a link to tell them how to join the email list, which is really very simple. I can also tell you how to join the list, and it's by sending an email to raspberryvi-request@freelists.org and put subscribe in the header. Well, they can always email me at mike@raspberryvi.org, and I will answer any questions if I can. If I know the answers, if I don't know the answers, I'll try and bluff it.
Other thing I'd like to add is that I have kept a blog of my experiences, and that's at raspberryvi.org/rill. So if anybody wants to see what my successes and failures have been, when I have an opportunity to discover something new, I put a blog post up about it.
So that's great. That makes it very easy for people to get involved. And we'll put all of those links in our show notes so that people have one place they can go to find out all they need to know.
Now for this week's final segment, using the GPIO, or General Purpose Input-Output Pins.
So Mike, in particular, you've made several references to the GPIO bus and ports that are on the device and how these can be used to make the Raspberry Pi device even more flexible and useful. Can you talk a little bit about that interface and how to use it? What's it for?
Right. It's a bus on, when I say bus, I mean it's a collection of pins, two rows of 13 pins, so a total of 26 pins on the board. And in that collection of pins, there are serial ports, some industry standard connections, and a number of general purpose pins which can be configured either as inputs or outputs. And what those pins actually do is you can basically switch them on and off. You can have voltage coming out of them or no voltage coming out of them, or voltage going into them or no voltage going into them. What that means is that you can use it to switch external devices, and you can also use it to sense input from external devices. One of the things I've been doing is I've connected ultrasonic transducer, and I'm trying to create a range detecting device by detecting the speed at which the ultrasonic pulses are returned to the board. And you know, that's interesting, and that may have an application for a blind person, of course, because, you know, mobility canes with ultrasonic devices attached cost something like $800, $900. Also, you could connect a number of push buttons to the GPIO pins and write some code to make a basic Braille note taker for a fraction of the cost of what they cost in the open market. And, of course, you could use it to do things like Mo's brother is controlling his car, or there are projects on the internet for making a device for feeding your cats, you know, and all kinds of things. Generally, the GPIO bus is there for education, but also it makes it a cool tinker toy to connect to the outside world.
Now, what are the drivers that one uses to interface with the GPIO pins? Is that all in Python or some other driver language?
There are Python libraries which will allow you to configure and switch and sense inputs and outputs on the GPIO bus, but there are also libraries for C and C++ for the other programming languages. You can even do it from Bash if you want to, and there's plenty of different languages, lots of different languages that you can use to basically to query the bus and also to send outputs to it.
Sounds like you can do almost anything with it.
If you spend the time to write the code and you have somebody to help you with the soldering, of course, that's the thing with being visually impaired. But, you know, these things don't happen in isolation. So, you know, if a blind guy has a sighted child or, you know, sighted siblings or whatever, then it can be a family project, I guess.
Well, and, you know, you talk about these things not happening in isolation. I think it's so important that people can connect using the internet and email forums. So there's lots of help out there. And these are developed by communities. After all, these are kind of projects that everybody's contributed to. Not one person can do it all.
Absolutely.
Now, they asked us to mention one disclaimer that appears on the Raspberry Vi website and on the footer of every message posted to their list. And this disclaimer points out that they are not in any way connected with or affiliated to the Raspberry Pi Foundation, and that their web content and the opinions expressed on the email list do not reflect the views of that foundation. It also points out that the Raspberry Pi logo and the Raspberry Pi name and the phrase "take a bite" are registered trademarks of the foundation.
So that's it. If you want to play around with a relatively inexpensive computer and see what you can do with it, give it a shot. There's plenty of help out there to get you going and carry you on later on. And remember, the links to all the information you'll need are, as usual, in our show notes at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 1407. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about ice hockey for blind and low vision people. Ice hockey can actually be a safe and fun sport for people with little or no vision, and we will speak with Matt Morrow, Executive Director of Courage Canada Hockey for the Blind, and learn about their programs for adults and youth and a little bit about their upcoming annual tournament. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and Audioboo at Eyes on Success and on Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.